The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 306. Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Let me get myself. You good?
I'm good.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Okay.
You're going to keep that on, aren't you?
No, 100%.
Damn it. Sorry.
I'm keeping that too. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 306 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast, presented by Overdrive. There is no Jill today. She is still in Seattle enjoying some R&R after a very busy American Library Association midwinter session, I think they call it now.
Midwinter, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they used to call it a conference, now they call it a session. I don't know. I saw somebody write something, and I was like, well, that's not right. I got all smarmy, and then I went on the website. I was like, oh, you changed it? Anyway, so if you have listened to any amount of time to our podcast, you'll know that that's Christina who's with us. Hello,
hello,
Christina.
Hello, hi.
There it is.
I'm back.
You're back. So Christina is going to assist me today. I'm going to do two things. The first thing I'm going to do is go through all of the biggest books coming out in February. Jill sent me her list and then I made my list. So I'm going to go through all those somewhat quickly. And Christina, you can just be peanut gallery.
I'm ready.
You can do the Statler and Waldorf here if you want. Maybe don't trash the books. They actually
sound
really good.
I won't. I can't trash anything I've not read.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally fair. And these all do sound really good. So we're going to go through those, and then we're going to go through some ensemble cast books, right?
Yes. I was inspired by the SAG Awards.
Bring this a little bit closer to your face.
Sorry. So, you know, it's award season right now, so there's all kinds of buzz around movies, and I saw it had to have been the SAG Awards or one of the award shows, and they talked about best ensemble cast, and you know, Black Panther, mm-hmm. I think, picked that up. And I was like, you know, I love books that have a revolving door of characters. Like, you know, you get multiple points of view, and I just feel like we haven't talked about that, and it should be celebrated. And I was able to come up with a pretty good list.
I am totally on board, and I'm excited to hear your list. So first, we'll dive through the February books. And like I always tell people, I'll have all these books in our show notes. And if you go to our website, we have our monthly reading list there under the About Us page. So you don't have to furiously write any of these down. And I'm sure Overdrive's social stuff will put this all out there as well. And then we'll dive into the books that Christina mentions, and I'll put those in the show notes too. So you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. You can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com, or you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. Very consistent. Okay.
Subscribe below.
Yeah. Click that button to subscribe. Do you like the whole, like, the YouTube thing where they, like, make the sound like, and then, like, they put their hand up and, like, yeah, it's up there.
Did you see that funny meme that was, like, the kid that was being put to bed and he was, like, saying goodbye to everyone? The mom was like, say goodbye. And he was like, subscribe below, because yeah, he honestly thought that that's how people said goodbye. And I laughed for a year.
That makes me so happy. Just a heads up, everyone. This is probably going to be a long episode because Christina and I are long-winded. It's two of us.
Yeah, I don't know how to stop talking.
It's You're horrible. Also looking at me through the pop filter, and it's adorable.
I know. I don't know what my... I don't know if you've ever looked at our team page. Not that anyone here would do this, but whenever there's a prop, I do this thing where I hide behind it. So there's like several pictures of me just like half in a photo because I'm hiding behind like a pole or a piece of paper or a body. It's a weird thing I do.
You're right. You do that.
I don't know why.
Okay. All right. First one is called Black Leopard, Red Red Wolf by Marlon James. This is getting so much buzz. It's been getting a buzz for like the last year. It is being described as an African Game of Thrones.
I mean,
it's kind of reductive to say that, but that's exactly how he describes it as well. So it's the first novel in a trilogy called the Dark Star Trilogy. It's myth, it's fantasy, it's history. But yeah, Jill and I have just been describing it to people as African Game of Thrones. So.
Is it adult or young adult?
It is adult.
I was wondering because it's like Game of Thrones and, you know, the slaughter, but...
Yeah, it's adult. Speaking of Game of Thrones, Alex and I started our rewatch that you and your husband and I, and we're all supposed to do together, but...
I understand.
There's six seasons, and your husband's in his busy season right now.
I know. I'm trying to watch The Punisher with him, and I have to wait till he gets home.
Yeah, that just sounds hard. But anyway, please respect my privacy during these times, as I will be getting upset. As the second episode of Game of... This is what's going to happen. I knew that in the first season...
Oh my gosh, you took your glasses off. This is getting serious.
I know. So, spoiler alerts for the first season of Game of Thrones, but if you haven't caught up on that yet, this is not my problem.
Didn't the first book come out in like the 90s? Come on, people. This is fair.
So, I remembered that early on in the first season, like all the direwolves that the Stark family gets, that they, you know, not great stuff happens to the direwolves. I didn't realize it's literally the second episode, Lady... gets murdered and Lymeria has to be like sent off into the woods. Second episode.
Things and I felt happen. Like it's just so much has happened in that series and that I've only seen the TV shows. I've not read the books. I did try to read the first book. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm actually going to talk about it because speaking of ensemble casts, mm-hmm. Game of Thrones is one of the biggest one that comes up for like best cast of characters. There's so many people.
Yeah.
I just, George R. R. Martin, like, good for you, man. Like, you must have a stellar memory. You must remember, like, nuanced crap about people because keeping track of everyone in that series is just, like, you mentioning Nymeria, I was like, oh, yeah, that was a dog in the book. I love dogs. You would think I would be able to, anyway, sorry, we're getting, you know, keep going. We've gotten one book done.
Getting through one book. Okay. The next one is called Finding Dorothy by Elizabeth Letts. This richly imagined novel tells the story behind The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, the book that inspired the iconic film, through the eyes of author L. Frank Baum's intrepid wife, Maud. So it's in Hollywood. It's 1938. Maud learns that MGM is adapting her late husband's masterpiece for the screen, and 77-year-old Maud goes to the set to try to finagle her way like on there, and basically... it's just like her view, it's a historical fiction of her being on set and trying to make sure that everything is done the right way. So it's called Finding Dorothy, Elizabeth Letts. My wife Alex is a huge Wizard of Oz fan, so I couldn't not put that one on there. So,
that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that one. The next one, Dan can talk about it for more than like 2 seconds because I don't think we need to. She doesn't need our publicity, but Angie Thomas... her follow-up to The Hate U Give on The Come Up is coming out this month, so it's going to be amazing.
She's an amazing writer. She's amazing to follow on Twitter.
She's an amazing follow on Twitter. Yes, she is.
She's hilarious. She's insightful. Obviously, everything she is in her books. I'm so happy for her success.
Yeah. So it's called On The Come Up, and it's the follow-up novel to The Hate U Give, which I'm almost positive is still number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
Is it a follow-up in that it's in the same universe, or is it a different story?
I believe it is a different story entirely, it looks like.
Okay.
I haven't really looked up much about it, because I just know I'm going to read it anyway.
Right.
Although I said she's still number one on the New York Times bestsellers list, but Leigh Bardugo's new book, King of Scars, came out today on Tuesday when we're recording this, so I'm assuming that will be number one, because Leigh is also a queen.
We're going to be talking about Leigh a little bit later as well.
I bet I know which ones you're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The next one I have is called The Familiars by Stacey Halls. So in 1612 in Lancaster, England, the hunt for witches is rampant, but in a time of suspicion and accusation, to be a woman is the greatest risk of all. So young Fleetwood Shuttleworth, what a name, is with child again as the mistress of Gawthorpe Hall. Incredible names.
Oh my God, it gets better.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's anxious to provide her husband with an heir, but none of her previous pregnancies have come to term. Then she discovers a hidden letter from her physician that warns her husband that she will not survive another pregnancy. Distraught over the frightening revelation, Fleetwood wanders to the woods of Pendle Hill, where she meets a young local woman named Alice Gray, A midwife, Alice promises Fleetwood she can help her deliver a healthy baby, but soon Alice is drawn into a frenzied accusations of witchcraft sweeping the country. Even the woodland creatures, the familiars, are suspected of practicing the dark arts. Can Fleetwood trust Alice and can Fleetwood trust that Alice really is who she says she is? As the two women's lives become intertwined, Fleetwood must risk everything to prove Alice's innocence in order to save her own unborn child.
You had me at witches. I'm very into witches right now.
Everyone is very into witches.
Well, I know. I'm just very on trend. You know, I've loved witches since Practical Magic.
Okay.
Willow from Buffy. Like, always just felt.
We almost did a Buffy episode today.
I know. Like, we still can't, like, you know.
We'll come back to it.
I wanted to do a whole thing about books inspired by Buffy because it's a whole thing. But
well, and Kirsten White's Slayer.
Slayers, but I want to read it first.
Right.
And then come back.
Also on the New York Times bestsellers list, I think, right now. My next one is The Raven Tower by previous guest of a couple times, Anne Leckie, who is amazing. Gods meddle in the fates of men. Men play with the fates of gods, and a pretender must cast down from the throne in this breathtaking first fantasy novel from Anne Leckie. So Anne Leckie was the best-selling author and winner of the Hugo, Nebula, and Arthur C. Clarke Awards. Those are the three major sci-fi awards. She won all of them at the same time, first person to ever do that. So this is her first fantasy novel, which I'm really excited about. Her sci-fi stuff is very, like, high science fiction. It's really, really good, but it's, I wouldn't say that it's, like, entry-level science fiction. It's some of those books where it might seem a little, like, Quentin at our office would love it because he's a huge science fiction person. So you need a little bit of science fiction-y background to understand, to kind of follow along. But this one, diving into fantasy, I'm a giant fantasy nerd. So
yeah,
it's The Raven Tower by Anne Leckie. The next one, again, not going to spend a lot of time on this, but the first official Stranger Things novel is coming out called Suspicious Minds by Gwenda Bond. Yeah.
I didn't know this was a thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. So everyone, us included, who are waiting for Stranger Things or season 3 to come out, this is a good way to tide us over. Alex and I have taken off the first two seasons. We took off like the day it came out on Netflix, and like that's all we do.
Netflix has ruined me for regular TV. I'm like, what is this commercial? What do they mean? I have to wait for another episode. I can't do it.
I know. So it's described. So the description: a mysterious lab, a sinister scientist, a secret history. If you think you know the truth behind Eleven's mother, prepare yourself to have your mind turned upside down.
Oh. Yeah. God.
It's a prequel.
I want to be the person that writes blurbs about books.
I know, yeah. This one, seriously, if you think you know the truth about Eleven's mother, prepare to have your mind turned upside down.
I hope that person typed it and then was just like, yes!
Yeah, just like threw off their sunglasses.
My work here is done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Went to lunch. so it's called Suspicious Minds by Gwenda Bond.
I'm loving the universe things that are happening. You know, Buffy's got her own thing now. Like, mm-hmm. people are dipping into known, you know, celebrated lore. I mean, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. The next one is The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls by Anissa Gray. Great name. The Butler family has had their share of trials as sisters Althea, Viola.
I think you however you want.
Okay. The sisters Althea, Viola, and Lillian can attest, but nothing prepared them for the literal trial that will upend their lives. Althea, the eldest sister and substitute matriarch, is a force to be reckoned with. And her younger sisters have alternatively appreciated and chafed at her strong will. They are stunned as the rest of the small community when she and her husband Proctor are arrested, and in a heartbeat the family goes from one of the most respected to one in utter disgrace. The worst part is that not even her sisters are remotely sure what happened. As Althea awaits her fate, Lillian and Viola must come together in the house they grew up in to care for their sister's teenage daughter. What unfolds is a stunning portrait of heart and core. And the core of an American family. So that is The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls by Anissa Gray. A lot of these that Jill sent to me, they sound really good, but I will, obviously, some of them I didn't read all of the description ahead of time. I blew it.
No, you didn't.
The next one is called The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon.
All of these titles, I'm just...
Uh-huh.
On title alone, sometimes I pick books based on title, and like all of these, I'd be like, yep, done, sign me up.
Yeah, so The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon. Speaking of things that just seem amazing, the cover, it has this giant dragon on it. You've seen the cover at my desk.
Yeah, it's big. It's a big one.
Yeah, it's a 900-page book. It's fantasy. I'm not going to get into too much of it because she's coming on the podcast in a couple weeks, which means I have to read her 900-page book in a couple weeks, so I make sure that I can speak confidently.
And you're like, can you grab that for me? And I was like, sure, let me just put it in my bag for you, not expecting it was going to be this like 4-pound book.
I know, I'm actually going to give her a hard time and be like, you know, you could have just made this a whole trilogy. Like, this is just, you've written your three books here.
And that's why ebooks are great, because lugging around a 4-pound book is difficult.
Yeah, it takes up so much room on my bookshelf. So Samantha, she's the internationally bestselling author of The Bone Season, which she wrote like in college. She's young. She's one of those like frustratingly awesome people who's very young. So this is A World Divided, A Queendom Without an Heir, An Ancient Enemy Awakens, The House of Baron Thnet has ruled for 1,000 years, still unwed. The queen, Sabran the Ninth, must conceive a daughter to protect her realm from destruction, but her assassins are getting close to her door. There's just so much in the description and in the book, and Samantha's been tweeting out pictures of like the maps and stuff, and it looks amazing. So Priory of the Orange Tree, I'm not going to go into it more right now because, again, we're going to have like a whole episode with her.
I'm excited. That sounds really good. Hair, I love that it's like a female hair has to be produced. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I agree.
Matriarchy.
Yeah. This next one is Early Riser by Jasper, and I want to say Fjord, but it's F-F-O-R-D-E. So it might be Ford with two Fs. Regardless, Jasper had nothing to do with the last name, but it's wonderful. I love it. So this is a new standalone from the best-selling author of Every Winter. The new standalone novel from best-selling author Jasper Fjord, Every Winter, the Human Population Hibernates. During those bitterly cold...
We should do that anyway.
We should be doing that right now. It's bitterly cold right now. During those bitterly cold 4 months, the nation is a snow-draped landscape of desolate loneliness devoid of human activity. This actually might be nonfiction.
Oh, it's about Cleveland? Because, yeah. I mean, that's what's going on right now.
Yeah, when you're listening to this, we'll have wind chills in like the negative
30s. Yeah, it's going to be one on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's singular.
One. 1 degree.
Maybe.
Maybe less.
So this book is all about Charlie Worthing, and you are Charlie, and it's your first season with the Winter Consuls, the committed but mildly unhinged group of misfits who are responsible for ensuring the hibernatory safe passage of the sleeping masses. You're investigating an outbreak of viral dreams, which you dismiss as nonsense, nothing more than a quirky artifact born of the sleeping mind. When the dreams start to kill people, it's unsettling. When you get the dreams too, it's weird. When they start to come true, you begin to doubt your sanity. So
much to unpack there. I love it.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. And the
second person, don't see that a lot. Viral dreams that can kill people, desolate winter. Sign me up, man.
And not for nothing, the cover has like a snow globe on it. So,
well, then that seems very sweet and gentle for this very alarming. Mm-hmm.
The description of the book and the cover are two like wildly different things.
But I like that. I like that you're like, oh, this seems like such a gentle story. And then it's like, nope, death by dreams.
Yep. The next one is The Night Tiger by Yangzi Cho.
Oh.
Did you see this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. So, quick-witted, ambitious Ji Lin is struck as an apprentice dressmaker, moonlighting as a dance hall girl to help pay off her mother's mahjong debt. But when one of her dance partners accidentally leaves behind a gruesome souvenir, Ji Lin may finally get the adventure she's been longing for. 11-year-old houseboy Ren is also on a mission, racing to fulfill his former master's dying wish that Ren find the man's finger lost years ago in an accident and bury it with his body. Ren has 49 days to do so, or his master's soul will wander the earth forever. As the days tick relentlessly by, a series of unexplained deaths racks the district, along with the whispers of men who can turn into tigers. Ji Lin and Ren's increasingly dangerous paths crisscross through lush plantations, hospital storage rooms, and ghostly dreamscapes.
Speaking of, that would be consideration for an ensemble cast because it's two different perspectives, which I think would qualify.
I think it would, but you haven't read it yet, so you can't talk about it.
I can't. I don't want to say anything, but it sounds really good.
Yeah.
I don't read a lot of books that are bad. I don't really believe in bad literature.
No, if it's bad, you stop reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson, and I think this is one that Jill had like specific notes that she wanted me to say, so let me just track it down. It's 1986. It's the heart of the Cold War, and Marie Mitchell is an intelligence officer with the FBI. She's brilliant, but she's also a young black woman working in an old boys club. Her career is stalled out. She's overlooked by for every profile squad, and her days are filled with monotonous paperwork. So when she's given the opportunity to join a shadowy task force aimed at undermining Thomas Sankara, the charismatic revolutionary president of Burkina Faso, whose communist ideology has made him a target for an American intervention, she says yes. That's a long sentence. Yes, even though she secretly admires the work that they're doing for his country. Yes, even though she's still grieving the mysterious death of her sister. And yes, even though a furious part of her suspects she's being offered the job because of her appearance and not her talent. So
there's a lot there too.
Yeah, there's a lot in a lot of
social commentary.
Books. Yeah, that's American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson. Another very good cover too. Next one I have, I will not talk a lot about, but it's basically a biography of Wild Bill, the true story of America's American frontier's first gunfighter, by Tom Clavin. I'm just a giant, like, Westerns nerd, and so...
So is my dad. My dad loves Westerns.
Mike B.
He loves them so much. I feel like every time he comes to my house, I gotta watch them. And Westerns are bleak. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't... Not a lot of happiness in Westerns. Like, you'll like somebody and... If you like them, they usually get killed. So I'm seeing an upsurge though of Westerns. I feel like a lot of people miss in the old days.
Yeah.
Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Pew, pew.
Those are the guns. The next one is The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley. And I think this is another one that Jill has some fun notes for me. So please hold. Okay. Everyone's invited. Everyone's a suspect. For fans of Ruth Ware and Tana French, so like our entire office, comes this atmospheric page-turning novel of psychological suspense in the tradition of Agatha Christie. So again, like everyone in here. Jill wanted to let me know that, AKA, this is my favorite genre of all time, a close-knit group of suspicious characters locked together and murder.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley. It sounds like it's like 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle or again, like all the Agatha Christie
Good
books.
Ensemble cast.
Yeah, exactly. Every time you say that, I think of Ensembles from New Girl. This is an early on season when Winston is really good at playing the handbells.
Am I saying ensemble right?
No, you're saying it right.
Okay,
I just
good.
Always think of...
But you know, sometimes you see words and you're like, am I even saying this wrong
no,
this
yeah,
whole time?
Ensemble, yeah, ensemble.
Because I read a lot, but I don't... And I talk a lot, so there's no excuse. Never mind. Continue.
No, you're good. I just like saying ensemble.
Ensemble.
Yeah, it's ensemble. You had it right the first
time.
Okay,
good.
The next one is The Blood Spell by C.J. Redwine. This is a dark and romantic epic fantasy retelling of Cinderella.
In.
Yeah, so CJ,
sign me up.
CJ Redwine has done this. This is the fourth one of these that she's done. So I saw this cover. It's a white pumpkin with...
Oh,
like,
God.
Yeah.
In.
And like, with like snow and red writing in it. My wife, one of Christina's best friends, Alex, loves herself a retelling.
And a retelling she ain't liked.
Exactly. And so I showed her this cover, and she proceeded to immediately go, and our library had all of CJ's other three books as audiobook. She borrowed them all at the same time, and she's like, well, I'm just going to, this is my next week. So, CJ, you have four books that were borrowed right away by my wife.
I love a good retelling.
Yes, that's The Blood Spell. And then the last one that I have is called Four Dead Queens by Astrid Schultz.
Yes. All over Twitter. So excited about this.
All over Twitter. Not only that, the publisher sent me a note ahead of time that was like, hey, this is right up your alley. And they were right. And so I actually got a couple of copies. And Andrea, who comes on frequently with you, took one of the copies.
She liked it.
She loved it. Yeah. She was like texting me. And I haven't read it yet, but I'm very excited too. It is all over Twitter. This is a young adult kind of fantasy thriller. And it's basically there's four queens who have died, but I guess you get the story of how they all died and what happened to them and what's going on in this realm. And it sounds really dark and really good. And it comes, Andrea is very, not picky, but like she has high standards for YA because she reads
so much
of it.
She does. She reads really good. Like she has, which, you know, there's so many great fantasy science fiction books out there in the YA space, so mm-hmm. It's hard, you know, you've read one, you've read them all, so I'm excited about this one because she loved it so much and she's never let me down in terms of recommendations.
Agreed. And I have a copy of it just waiting for me to read it, and I'm excited to do that. And the cover of this is also beautiful with all like the crowns,
yeah, Which is Queens, all up my alley. Love all of that.
Exactly. So that's Four Dead Queens by Astrid Schulte or Schulte. I'm not sure. I'll find out. So that's like 15 to 16 books that we just barreled through.
Yeah, you did good.
Well, I wouldn't say I did good. I think I fell over a lot of those words. And I'm sure people were like, slow down. But now I want to get to your stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm ready.
Okay, good. So did I take long enough for you?
No, it was perfect. I'm ready to dissect what I have available for us today.
Okay, so now you're going to get into ensemble casts.
Yes. So anyway, to reiterate, ensemble means that it's not – the way I have decided to define this is it's the perspective of multi-characters. So maybe it's two characters who are telling the same story. Maybe it's two characters who are basically – charging towards one another to meet in the middle. So be easy on me. There might be some here where you're scratching your head, but.
So you're using like multiple narrators, but also a big cast.
Yeah. So like basic examples start at number one, Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. Obviously the story of Harry Potter is told from Harry Potter's perspective, but it has a sprawling cast of characters. I think J.K. Rowling is one of the best at this. She did, what was the series that she did as Robert Galbraith?
Oh, Corman and Strike.
Something. She does a wonderful job about building out her characters. Because if you think about it, the way we live life, like obviously it's from our perspective, but we have a revolving cast of characters in our life. So like to tell the same story. So I enjoy a book that I'm one of those people that ends up like stanning a side mm-hmm. character. Like Professor McGonagall is like my favorite character in the Harry Potter world, which is, I mean, it should be everyone's favorite because she's so amazing. But, like, that's what I do. I will, like, latch on. My favorite character is never the main character. It's always, like, Willow and Buffy. Yeah. Professor McGonagall. Game of Thrones. I think I was, like, hugely into Tyrion forever.
Yeah.
And I still am. He's still amazing. But anyway, okay, so that's why.
Speaking of McGonagall, so that's Maggie Smith, right?
Yes, Dame Maggie Smith.
Dame Maggie Smith. Did you know that there is a... I just found out about this morning, but there is apparently a documentary called Tea with the Dames on iTunes and Amazon, and it's Maggie Smith and three other dames from England, including...
Helen Mirren?
I don't think Helen Mirren's in it, but like everyone look this up. It's called Tea with the Dames, and it's these four wonderful dames from England, and a dame is like the female version of being knighted for your work in the arts. They are all friends and have been all their lives.
Judi Dench?
Yes.
Dame oh, Judy my God!
Dench, so they get together.
I can't handle this.
Literally like the tea, like how you say, spill the tea. So they drink tea, but they also just gossip about their past and like romances they've had and all this stuff.
I feel like I've dreamed this and it's come true.
Somebody tweeted about this morning that was like, I think I've imagining this, but I just saw it on iTunes and then they watched it and like, it's perfect.
I'm like shaking with so much. I love Maggie Smith. Also, if you ever are just bored, look her up. When she was younger, she was a dish. Mm-hmm. Maggie, I love you.
A dish.
So anyway, so now that we've established what an ensemble cast is, I'm going to dive in. So I have a couple I want to start. I've kind of gone across YA and adult because that's just how I read. Mm-hmm. The first one I'm going to start with is American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Preach, honey.
That is, I think, one of the best, well done. I mean, and it's, I love when ensemble casts kind of rely on your own knowledge of history. So American Gods, obviously, takes on the knowledge of mythology. And I think, you know, and what's wonderful about American Gods is it's old gods, like in
mythology.
Mythology, thank you. So you have the All-Father, mm-hmm. which, that's not a spoiler, right? You know from the beginning.
You know pretty early.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of spoilers.
There's going to be rifle spoilers.
This came out in like 19, I think, you know, it was like early 90s.
So you have the old Norse mythology.
Now you're in your own head.
And then the idea is that gods are essentially become gods by our belief in them. Mm-hmm. So there's the new gods, so the god of mythology, or the god of media, the god of technology.
Yeah.
So it's like you become a god by how much faith you put into a thing. And there's like multiple Jesuses in American Gods. It's a really fun ensemble cast, and like you get to sort of unpack who each god is. I can't say enough about it. It's really fun. It's also a series on Amazon.
Yes.
Very well done. So love that. Great place to start. And that's what a lot of ensemble casts do. Speaking of gods, Rick Riordan, does a wonderful job with ensemble cast.
Nice.
You know, the Heroes of Olympus, Percy Jackson. Again, it's relying a little bit on your knowledge of mythology, so you don't have as much backstory into the characters, which I think you need when you're doing ensemble cast. You can't spend too much time, and J.K. Rowling is one of the few who does it really well, where she can unpack a character and you're not like, God, oh my God, I don't remember. Who is this person? Same with George R.R. Martin. If you're going to do a lot of characters in one story, you better give them enough backstory to make them interesting. Otherwise, yeah. You're going to be like, why are there so many people in this book?
Mm-hmm.
Next one. So shout out to Jody at Miami University. He made us read this book, White Teeth by Zadie Smith, when I was a college student. Zadie Smith is so wonderful. I had a really hard time reading White Teeth. It was an assigned book for me in college, and I will be honest, a lot of time, I was a literature major. I didn't read all the books I had to read.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of, like, you know, reading on the internet.
Spark notes.
You know, getting as much as I could to write enough about it, but also, you know, raise my hands, participate as much as I could, but, you know, didn't have time. I actually didn't read White Teeth when I was supposed to, but I picked it up later. And I'm so mad at myself because now, like, the discussions that we had in class, like, make so much more sense. So White Teeth is the story of Archie Jones and Samad Iqbal. They were friends in World War II, and it's the story of their families and how they kind of get mixed up together. So Archie is on his second marriage to a woman named Clara Bowden. She is missing teeth. White Teeth, where that comes from. She's Jamaican, half his age, and basically quite literally gives him a second lease at life. They produce their daughter, Irie. She's a knowing child whose personality doesn't quite match her name. It's Jamaican for no problem. Apparently, she's quite the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, really good story. There's so much in here. There's an arranged marriage. There's the Islamic faith and how it is basically being trashed at this time in England, and just how they're basically intersecting together, and they're two different people who find their friendship. Really great story. Sad, has a lot of really great stuff in it. Can't say enough about it. Zadie Smith is wonderful, so well written. It's one of those books that still, when I put it down, I can remember where I was when I finished it, because yeah. It just was like, oh, so like heart-punchingly good. So I can't say enough. Really good, wonderful story. So that was adults.
Yeah, White Teeth is so good.
I know, it's
that was adult. Well, Rick Gordon's an adult. Rick Gordon's...
Oh, yeah, I did YA. I'm just going to go all over the place.
Yeah, say, I was like, wait a minute, you started with Harry Potter.
Sit tight, everyone. Yeah, I'm going to jump all over the place. Buckle I have up. No rhyme or reason going on in my brain right now.
No, you're good.
The next one is The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater.
I always say her name wrong, and I'm not even going to try.
I don't even... She wrote... I was super into her. She wrote... Her first series was... what was that first series about werewolves? I was really into it. Shiver. She was one of the first, like, YA books that I got super into after the Twilight phase. I had Twilight phase. I was very into vampires. And I was like, oh, I'm sick of vampires. Like, what else out there? And then werewolves, obviously, naturally. So she wrote the Shiver series. I loved that. The Raven Boys tells the story of Adam, Ronan, and Noah. So it's these three boys, and it's... They're basically, I believe they turn into ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, I haven't read this in a really long time, but they're told from the different perspectives of the three boys, and the three boys all have, like, something very interesting about them. So Adam is the scholarship student, and he kind of resents his privilege. Ronan is the fierce soul who, you know, ranges from anger to despair, you know, the sad boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Noah is kind of like the sort of, like, calm watcher of the four. And then there's Gansey, who's kind of, like, the main character. So, four boys, shapeshifters.
Like Animorphs.
Yes, basically it's like a, you know, a YA Animorphs.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's Steve Otter.
Steve Otter.
I looked it up.
Steve
yeah.
Otter.
She literally, on her website, she's like, it's like the name Steve and that furry little adorable animal.
Steve Otter.
Steve Otter.
Thank
Maggie
you.
Steve Otter.
Thank you, Maggie. She does a great job. She's really good at building out character. And I don't know. I feel like it's one of those books with, like, four boys, and it's like the perfect quiz to be like, which Raven boy would be your boyfriend?
Yeah.
And I feel like I would definitely fall for Ronan. Because I like the bad boy. So.
Yeah, you do. Your husband is such a bad
He's
boy.
He's such a bad boy. That's Scott. My husband is an accountant.
The
Very nice.
The kindest man.
Kindest. Hey, when he was in college, he was kind of mean. It worked.
Yeah, well, he does listen to, like, thrash metal.
Yeah, you know, he's got a secret history there.
He contains multitudes.
Next one, One of Us is Lying by Karen McManus. This one has been on the podcast a couple of times. Andrea's read it. I feel like a couple of the other girls here have. It is The Breakfast Club basically meets, like, murder.
The Breakfast Club meets murder.
I mean, it's definitely inspired by The Breakfast Club because it's like these kids in detention and you have, you know, the popular person, the bad guy, the smart, like all fulfilling that like click character. But what's different about this story that's different from The Breakfast Club is one of them dies and the whole story is who did it. So it's a whodunit style mystery with the perspective of each character. And of course, once you get the perspective of each character, you learn that, you know, it's not all rosy from the popular girl's perspective. It's an interesting story. And I did not know who did it. You know, usually when you read a story like that, you're like, ugh, I know.
Oh, I thought you meant like after you finished it. And I was like, well, that's not a good way
to end. Well, no, but I mean, I really truly wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm such an arrogant person. Sometimes I'll read a book or I'll watch a TV show and I'll be like, figured it out.
I know who did that.
I know who did it. Oh my God, it's so basic. And no, this one I was surprised and it's really good. And again, Breakfast Club meets murder.
I do that all the time when I'm watching shows with Alex because for whatever reason in TV, like I pick up on cues. When I'm reading a book, it usually does surprise me if it's well done. But almost no matter what, when we're watching something, I'll figure it out. And so at the end, she'll be like, whoa, that's crazy. And I'm like, was it? And she's like, shut up, just don't do that, don't be annoying. And I'm like, sorry.
I do that with Law and Order SVU all the time. I'm like, it's not him. I know how it works. The first 15 minutes in, they introduce the what you think is going to be the main suspect, and then it turns out the next 15 minutes that establishes the non-suspect that couldn't be the person that did it, and within the last 15 minutes that's you find out it was the person who did it.
Yeah, that's basically like every one of those shows, like Bones and NCIS. Yeah, dun dun. All of those.
Yeah. My mom loves Bones. Mike and Trace love
Trace.
So good. Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo.
Yeah.
Could not talk about that in terms of an ensemble cast. In fact, when I was doing my research for this podcast this morning.
No one saw like the hair flip.
I did a hair flip. She came up in every literary search that I did. And of course, without no need for reason. She is one of the best authors of our time. I love her. So this is set in a place called Ketterdam, a wonderfully scuzzy, incredibly atmospheric, haunting, crime-ridden town. Cass, a brutal and mysterious gang leader, also sexy.
Yeah, he's a real bae.
He's offered a chance to do the ultimate heist and has to put together a misfit crew to take the heist down. So it's like, you know, some Ocean's 11-inspired literature here. Inej the Wraith, Nina the Grisha, Matthias the Grisha Hunter, and Jesper the Sharpshooter. All of which, just profound characters. I don't even know who my favorite is. Just probably Nina, but yeah. Always because I pick like the like unsuspecting girl.
They're all so, no mourners, no funerals. That's from her books. Yeah, that's their like little thing. I love her so much. So excited for King of Scars, which just came out. And as I've said on the podcast many times, when I got to see her at BookCon and got to introduce her to my wife, Alex, she called my wife Wonder Woman, and Leigh Bardugo wrote a Wonder Woman book, and that was like my coolest moment of my life to introduce my wife to an author that she loves and have that author call her Wonder Woman. I was like, well, I've done my good deed.
And I think anything, like a heist is such a really interesting, like obviously you need a cast of characters. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like, you know, I love heist stories.
Yeah. Well, not only that, I feel like heists aren't done very often in like you don't really usually get a fantasy heist. It doesn't normally happen. Like heists tend to be set in real world.
And it's usually a crime is committed. And I mean, sign me up for that as well. And I feel like anytime I read a heist story or I watch a heist movie, I always like think how I would handle the position of being in a heist. And as it turns out, fantasy literary me is much better because in true fashion, anytime I've ever had to keep any sort of secret, I like can't. Like yeah. I would like if I robbed a bank, I'd be like, it was me, I did it, I'm sorry.
Lee's one of those authors, like, and there's like I love YA fantasy, so there's like 10 of these authors that I feel like I'll read a YA fantasy book by like a lesser author, lesser known and everything, and I'll be like, wow, that was incredible. That might be one of my favorite YA fantasy books ever. And then I'll read the newest Leigh Bardugo book and I'll be like, oh no, she's on a different plane.
Yeah, she completely just...
It's like a same thing with like Lainey Taylor when it comes to writing like fairy, like her and Naomi Novik, like when it comes to writing like fairy tales, it's like, oh no, 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 they're not even writing the same language that I write. Like it's a completely different, they're on another level. And Leigh is just one of those, like, she has one of those things where immediately from page one, you're like, this is the best.
And she just creates the world she creates and that you're in when you're reading her stories. It's insane to me when writers create whole other spaces that don't even exist. And then they have to kind of build a story from there, like build a story from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And some of these ensemble casts that I've talked about, they're using history that we know.
Yeah.
But Leigh essentially just, I mean, her brain is just, I can't.
Conjured it out of nowhere. Yep. Yeah. She's a genius. I love her.
The Lunar Chronicles. Cannot talk about them. You know how much I feel about... I love Marissa Meyer. She was a Sailor Moon fanfiction writer, and that's how I discovered her. And I remember when she posted on her fanfiction page that she was, you know, taking a hand at fiction, and it was going to come out the next year. And I was like, sign me up. And it was as amazing as I expected. It's retellings of Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood, Rapunzel and Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set in a nondescript time, but in the future, we've landed on the moon. We live there. People who live on the moon essentially basically inherit these powers, which gives them ability to control minds and all this great stuff. And it's told from the first perspective, Cinder. She's Cinderella as a cyborg.
Yeah.
Can't say enough. She does such a good job of just, again, setting up worlds, Earth and the moon in the future. You can kind of visualize what it's like because it's relying on where we are now in terms of, you know, if you told someone in 1955 that our smartphones were going to have maps on them, we were going to have a robotic voice that tells us when we have, you know, a meeting for the day, they mm-hmm. would be, their minds would be blown.
Yeah.
So it's relying on the technology that we have today to set this landscape of the future. Like, it's possible that we're almost there. And that's what I love about science fiction today. It's like, if we can imagine it, it probably could happen.
Right.
Maybe what, when I'm still here on Earth. It's, mm-hmm.
If people follow us on Instagram, they would have seen that actually my last Throwback Thursday post, I used Cinder because I used Christina, you. I call you like six different things, and it's just a lot. You bought my wife, Alex, a incredible gold Cinderella carriage, like Bluetooth speaker that is beautiful, and that was the TBT post, so.
And I saw that and, like, bought it for 6 months before her birthday.
You really did?
I was really excited
about it. So early.
But, like I said, she's wonderful. I know she's had a couple series come out since the Lunar Chronicles. I think it's called The Renegades is
Renegade
one.
Renegade series, yeah.
Another just probably really wonderful ensemble cast. I haven't had a chance to read it. I've been a terrible reader as of late, you know. I've read a lot of great books, but they're, like, 8 pages. So, but I love
that. Not a lot of ensemble picture books.
So. Llama Llama. Very into Llama Llama these days. And the last one I'm going to end on is actually kind of a... I feel like a lot of people have read this book, and you read it when you're young, The Westing Game.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first books I've ever read that had an ensemble cast and kind of a whodunit-style mystery. I remember reading that in the 8th grade. Do you remember The Westing Game?
Vaguely.
It's one of the first books... that has kind of like the whodunit style ending where you're like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And I remember like 8th grade me was like, mind was blown. Yeah. And I was super into books when I was that young and still today. And I remember like people talking about it in class the next day after mm-hmm. we had finished it because it was an assigned book. And like no one being as excited as I was about, you know, this ending. And it blew my mind. Like I had not read a book where something at the end happens and it's like you didn't see it coming. And it's one of the first really great ensemble casts, and I feel like it's great for all ages. I mean, again, it's a great middle mm-hmm. to YA book, but with a strong female character, that can't say enough.
I feel like The Outsiders could be an ensemble cast. There's a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Right.
Ponyboy, Stay Gold. Mm-hmm. What are their names?
Ponyboy. I read them so long ago, I don't remember their names. I'm not going to try and...
Rob Lowe.
Yeah,
I just remember he was in the movie.
Yeah, right, yeah. Let's see, there was
Ponyboy, Rob Lowe, Patrick Swayze, Tom Cruise before he got his teeth fixed.
Yeah, you know, like all those, I think Kevin Bacon maybe.
Yeah, just anyone who's, you know,
like all those characters in the book.
The Karate Kid. You know, those guys.
Yeah, like.
Best ensemble cast.
Jack Black from Neverending Story Part 3. Yeah. So in The NeverEnding Story, which is not really an ensemble cast, I wouldn't say, but there's a third movie. And the bad guy's name, or the bad guy is Jack Black. And the main character in NeverEnding Story's name is Balthazar. And Jack Black's super nerdy, like, he's the villain in the sense that he's like a just a bad teenager. And he steals the NeverEnding Story book and finds out that it's magical. And there's this line that I always say to my brother, and it's never not funny. And he goes, "Looks like I control the story now, Balthazar." And he just says it.
Wait, is this real?
This is real. Jack Black is the bad guy.
Is this like an old film?
NeverEnding Story?
No, NeverEnding Story 3. When did this come out?
Really old. Like in the, I don't know, like the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh my God, I didn't know this. Yeah.
And it ends in a very 80s, early 90s freeze frame high five.
Oh my God.
It's so good and so bad.
How did I not know about
Jack Black was also in Dead Man Walking. He was like a background character in that too. I know a lot about Jack Black.
Jack Black is an amazing actor. Mm-hmm.
And he was just in House with the Clocks and the Walls or whatever it's called, which is a book.
I heard some people weren't really happy with his portrayal.
I haven't seen it.
I feel like Jack Black is always Jack Black in any film. He's like Will Ferrell.
There's
like,
nothing you could say about Jack Black that I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you can't surprise me about Jack Black.
No. You could be anything he does. I'd be like, yeah, no, that's very Jack Black-like.
That checks out.
But no, I have to watch that. I didn't know. I would say
you don't have to. It's very bad.
No, The NeverEnding Story is a good ensemble. There's a lot of people in there.
There's a lot of people, but that's more like a journey.
Atreyu.
Falcor. Yeah.
The horse.
Moonchild. I think Artax.
Artax. Oh, Artax.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Moonchild, which is the name of the princess.
Yeah.
But you can't hear the name in the movie. We said Falcor. There's a lot.
Atreyu. What's the boy's name? Balthazar? Is that his
Balthazar name? Balthazar is his name.
And he's just like the regular kid that gets sucked into the story, right? Which is just unheard of that your name is Balthazar. Like, you have to get sucked into a fantasy story if your name's that.
There's a part in the movie when he is like halfway through the book and he takes a bite of his peanut butter jelly sandwich and he looks at it so longingly and he's like, "No, not yet." And puts it back in the bag to eat later. And it's so like... And the kid overacts it so hard. It makes me so happy. He's just like, not all of it.
I want to go back and just revisit the 80s. The Goonies, man. That's an ensemble cast right there.
It is. I don't love the Goonies. This is a big point of contention between Alex and I. I know. I'm sorry. I don't love it. I can respect why other people like it. I just don't really care for it.
That's fine.
I also don't like, you mentioned The Breakfast Club earlier. I don't really love like that or Pretty in Pink or like I'm not a huge fan of any of those movies.
Well, I mean, you're not really the target audience.
No. Who, John Hughes, right?
Yeah.
So, John Hughes wrote a ton of great stuff that I love. Like, he did Home Alone and a bunch of stuff that I loved. But I just don't care for, like, the Rat Pack movies.
I love them.
Or Brat Pack, rather. And it's a big point of contention between Alex and I.
I love them, but, I mean, I should.
Yeah.
Pretty in Pink, you know. Although, I think she should have ended up with Ducky, just saying.
Okay, well...
I'm done. I have no more books. If you want to just keep spitballing about it.
I was going to say, Breakfast Club's an ensemble cast, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Molly Ringwald. Is Rob Lowe in that? Is Rob Lowe just in everything?
I don't. Yeah, sure.
No, he's not. Rob Lowe's not in that.
Parks and Rec, that's an ensemble cast. With Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe. Let's just like talk about all the movies and shows Rob Lowe's made
Rob
better.
Lowe's been in. Yeah. No, I think we're probably good here. Yeah.
You know.
Okay, well, those were all of the February's biggest new releases that I kind of plowed through, and then a bunch of ensemble cast books as well. So thank you for filling in for me. I was very excited to get to talk to you.
You're welcome.
And then I realized I had to do the February books too, so I had to like bother Jill while she was in Seattle. I was like, I need your books. So okay, anything else you think people should know about, Christina? Stay warm. Bring your dogs inside.
Oh, we're working on a fun we worked on this fun marketing kit. I'm in marketing here, and it was about texts between YA couples.
They are really fun.
I'm pretty excited about that. And so now, in my mind, whenever I look at characters or see them on TV or read new books, I pretend like what their text messages would be between them. So it's a fun game if you're ever bored.
It was the two of us that were doing. We were changing each other's names in our phones to do this, and then we had a panic attack. We're like, make sure you change the name back so I didn't have to like look up like Augustus to find you.
Augustus Waters. Okay. So yeah, that was a fun game if you're ever bored.
Yeah,
text messages between literary characters is never, you know.
That honestly feels like we should make that into a Twitter account. Yeah. TM, copywriting, it's ours.
It's ours, a text between YA characters.
We're calling dibs. That has to exist somewhere.
It probably already does.
All right, well, thanks everybody for joining. Christina, thank you as always. You're the best. And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.